he suggested Michael Adams was criminally overlooked in 1991. So we'll talk about him first with the Denver Nuggets. Michael Adams in 1991. I'm just padding until I get to the right screen. He had...
So you're talking about Michael Adams from Denver?
Yes, that Michael Adams from Denver.
Then you are in Australia right now.
You're talking NBA basketball. You're talking great teams. You're talking great individual players.
Takes it off and there's number 23. And, of course, Johnny goes nuts.
We're all getting goosebumps thinking about it now.
I just tried to go out there and play my game.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Adam. I don't like anybody. I'm not a people person.
Grant, you made the pass, yes. Christian, can you catch the ball, yes.
All the stars were aligned and all the muscles fired at the right time, and I was able to get off the ground and throw one down.
I was saving that as a surprise for you.
And now, introducing your host for In All Airness, Adam Ryan.
Welcome to episode 26. Thanks for joining me. My website, inallairness.com, just add a /, and the episode number to view show notes. Please visit facebook.com/inallairness. Please add your like to the page, and you can even suggest topics for future episodes or guests you'd like to hear conversations with. Leave voicemail comments or questions on either of those two sites. Please subscribe to my show on iTunes, or you can simply add my RSS feed. Check out the right-hand sidebar of my website. You can hear the show on Stitcher, Player FM, and other podcatchers. You can follow me on Twitter at InAllAirness. I want to personally thank J.W. Bolin, a.k.a. John Bolin, and Shorey 1973 for their written iTunes reviews. Thanks very much, guys. I do really appreciate that. The show currently has 14 five-star ratings on the Australian iTunes store, which is just tremendous. If you add a review, I'd love to mention your name in a future episode of this show. Your ratings and reviews, as I do like to say, are the ultimate assist, and they help me reach a wider audience and give me the opportunity to get even greater high-profile guests on the show in future episodes. So please take just a moment to help rate and review the show. On this episode, I'm joined again by a good friend of the show, Aaron Steen. We discuss and dissect all things 1991 NBA season. Hope you enjoy it. We had fun recording it, as always. Now, onto the show. Today, I'm joined again by my good friend, Aaron Steen. Aaron, how are you, mate?
Adam, once again, mate, thank you for having me.
Not a problem at all, mate. Good to have you back. Been a little while since we've done a recording, so I'm looking forward to this one. And today, we're going to be chatting about the great 1991 NBA season. One of the great seasons of all time for numerous reasons. Of course, the Chicago Bulls winning the title always helps as well. Do you have a standout memory from the 91 season in particular, or is it just too difficult to narrow down?
Yeah, the 1991 season was the first full season that I got to enjoy as an NBA fan after I first started watching late in the other season before. So the memory of it is pretty vivid. Undoubtedly, the highlight of that season is the footage and that iconic image of MJ holding the Larry O'Brien trophy in tears with his dad beside him.
In the 1991 NBA season, the best record went to the Portland Trailblazers. They actually went 63-19. The Bulls clocked in at 61-21, which still gave them the home court advantage all through the Eastern Conference Finals. And obviously because Portland didn't make it to the NBA Finals, the Bulls ended up getting home court during the finals as well. So the Blazers were 63 wins. They had 114.7 points per game, which was third best in the league. Conversely, the worst record in the league went to the Denver Nuggets, who went 20-62. They were first in the league in points per game at about 119.9, but unfortunately their point differential was minus 10 point something. So they were actually outscored, and it was 130 points a game that they allowed. So not great news there for the Denver Nuggets.
That stat in itself is extraordinary, that the worst team in the league was the highest scoring team in the league. And what's even more extraordinary is the fact that they let through 130 points per game as well. That's quite humorous. The Bulls finished with a franchise record of 61-21 and then went 15-2 in the playoffs in their 25th anniversary season. And of course, culminated in the first title in franchise history.
And they finally got over the hill by defeating the Detroit Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals after falling the previous three seasons. Let's get into some of the award winners for the 91 season, mate. We might as well jump straight into it. The MVP of the league, the great Michael Jordan. He averaged 31.5 points a game, along with 6 rebounds and 5.5 assists per contest. Pretty clear-cut winner there, you'd imagine?
his shooting clips were also pretty good for that season.
So when Jordan did receive his MVP award, he was joined at half court by his teammates. A good sign of solidarity there from the players. They're all as one as Jordan accepted the award, and he was actually tearing up at half court as well. Might have been because of the fact David Stern was standing on his foot at the time, but I'm not too sure.
This season was undoubtedly MJ at his team-oriented best. After winning the NBA championship, he included all of his teammates in the We Are Going to Disneyland ad as well.
So Jordan was the MVP award winner. The rookie of the year that season was Derek Coleman, DC, who averaged 18.4 points a game along with 10.3 rebounds and 2.2 assists. A very good rookie campaign from Derek Coleman.
It was actually a pretty decent draft class that year. Not as a star-studded as some other seasons, but you had Derek Coleman at number one, Gary Payton at number two, Tyrone Hill, who played in an All-Star game, at number 11, the great rebounder eventually from the New Jersey Nets, Jason Williams, number 21. Elvin Campbell was the last pick in the first round at 27. You had Tony Kukoc, got drafted by the Bulls in 1990, didn't make it to the team until the 93-94 season. He went number 29, and Cedric Ceballos was the number 48 pick in that draft. So they had a pretty good spread of good players right through the first and second rounds.
Yep, some very good NBA names there. And actually, a little known fact about Cedric Ceballos. No, I won't go there, mate. It's already been done on another episode. For those that listen regularly, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about there. Let's go on, mate, straight to the Defensive Player of the Year. One of your favourite players, no doubt, and mine, the great Dennis Rodman. He averaged 8.2 points a game, but more importantly, brought down 12.5 rebounds per contest in this particular season. 4.4 a game were on the offensive boards, so he was just a menace. It was the fourth of five consecutive seasons where he played all 82 games, and from this season onwards, for the rest of his career, he averaged 15.9 rebounds a game. So he's a seven-time all-defensive first team. Just an incredible career, really. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer. A magnificent season there from the Worm.
He had his breakout year the year before when he made the All-Star team for the first time. Didn't make it in 1991, his first Defensive Player of the Year award, and, of course, went on to have an amazing career with the Pistons, Spurs, and the Chicago Bulls, among others. I guess I should add those, you know, the other dregs that he had at the end as well.
Yes, the old Dallas Mavericks and LA Lakers, I think, were the last two stops on the Dennis Rodman World Tour.
Yep.
Most improved player for the season went to Scott Skiles of the Orlando Magic at that stage, and he upped his averages from 8 points a game and five assists in the 1990 season to 17 points, eight assists, and three rebounds a game in 1991. So still a very young Orlando Magic team, only a few years from their expansion debut, but Scott Skiles was a quite deserving pick, I guess, for most improved player in that 91 season.
Particularly due to a game that he had on December 30 in 1990 against the Denver Nuggets in Orlando, when he broke the NBA record for the most assists in a game with 30, which is a record that still stands, which is very impressive.
Exactly right. He certainly was dishing out many dimes on that particular evening. Sixth Man of the Year award in 1991 went to one of my favourite players back in the day, the great Detlef Schrempf, who was with the Indiana Pacers. He averaged 16 points a game and had eight rebounds and four assists, along with two blocks, and he played all 82 games in that season, only started three of them. He won the 92 Sixth Man of the Year award as well. So along with Kevin McHale and Ricky Pierce, they're the only other guys to win the award multiple times.
One of the great original international players of the NBA, and the Indiana Pacers uniforms also at that stage were at their coolest as well, with the white and yellow stripes down the side.
All right, let's quickly get into the All-NBA first-team selections for 1991. It was led by the following players: Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson, MJ, Carl the Mailman Malone, and David the Admiral Robinson. I'm not sure why the dramatic pause there, but the Admiral was the fifth person in that All-NBA first team. Quite hard to argue with any of those selections. Perhaps Carl Malone for yourself.
Probably got stuck on his name and David Robinson's because you were afraid I was going to reach through the iPad and choke you.
Yeah, you're right. The all-rookie first team, Dee Brown, Derek Coleman, Kendall Gill, 3D, Dennis Scott, and Lionel Simmons round out the all-rookie first team. I didn't actually know until checking back on the stats for this episode that Lionel Simmons actually made it into the all-rookie first team ahead of Gary Payton, who would have such an illustrious career. He made second team. So quite an incredible thing there.
Lionel Simmons, a good rookie year. I think he averaged around 16 points per game or something in his rookie year.
He came out of LaSalle after playing 4 years at LaSalle, and he had averages of 25 points and 11 boards a game. So clearly could play the game and then some. And of course, looking back in hindsight, which we always say is a wonderful thing, particularly on a show just like this, his career petered out somewhat. He played his whole career with the Kings, but it didn't amount to a whole lot, although he did have one of the great nicknames, the L-Train. I've always been a fan of the L-Train as far as nicknames go.
He probably should have picked up that his NBA career was on the decline in that day. I think it was in Houston when the PA man, during the pregame announcements for the starting five, announced him as Lionel Hollins.
Didn't even know that it happened. Is that on YouTube?
No, I saw it on NBA Action once.
That's never a good sign. Is there any other award winners from that season that you'd like to briefly mention before we move on, or are we happy with the ones we've covered?
I think I'm pretty happy with the ones that we covered. I do have another useless fact, though, that we can add in if you like.
Please do.
Did you know that the 1990-91 NBA season was the first year that the flagrant foul was in play?
I knew it was an early 90s introduction, but I didn't know what year it came in, so there you go. That's a good little random tidbit. I like that.
And the Phoenix Suns and Utah Jazz opened up the season with two regular season games in Japan.
Yes, I did. They played in Tokyo from memory, so I do recall that. Here in Australia, on ABC Australia, they were the first games that we got to see for that particular season on TV, so I do remember that quite vividly. Even recorded on VHS tape, showing my age yet again. There's a number of notable retirees from this particular 91 season. Now, we obviously can't go into depth about each different player, and I'm going to leave some off, which will probably infuriate others, thinking, well, hang on, how about this guy? Alex Inglis, Jack Sikma, Reggie Theus, seven-year Bulls player Dave Corzine, Adrian Dantley, and we'll get back to him in a moment, and also Derek Chivas. His nickname was Miss, I think, Mischievous. His actual real nickname, according to Basketball Reference, is Band-Aid. I'm not making this up. Did you see that?
No.
Because usually it does list the player's nickname in brackets if they have one. His has the word Band-Aid written. It doesn't have it written because you couldn't write onto a screen. So he had it typed, Band-Aid. I have no idea what the meaning is behind that, but I thought his nickname was Miss, as in Mischievous. There were a couple of notable retirees. And also there's one brought up by somebody on Twitter when I did throw out the question about 1991 NBA season. Ian Lockhart played one game with the Phoenix Suns in 1991. Incredibly, he did not get his career extended any further because he went 1-for-1 from the field, 2-of-2 from the free throw line, and had no turnovers. So he had a perfect game, effectively, and unfortunately his career didn't go past that first and only NBA game.
Also, if any people who have any issues with the other content of our podcast, as in if we happen to leave a retiree out while it's our podcast, then that's just too bad.
So now you've actually not only alienated some of the possible guests on the show, you've also started to alienate some of the listeners. So that's really encouraging. Now, Steve Smith, not the Steve Smith that most people would think of straight away when you hear that name, but Steve Smith on Twitter, at Steve Smith FFX. He was the one who suggested that we discuss Ian Lockhart. So hopefully he enjoyed that. And now you have some trivia that you can bring out at future occasions based on that research. So thanks to Steve. All right, let's get into a few more random stats, mate. A couple of these have been brought up by some people on Twitter. So when we threw the question out about 1991 NBA season, a few people chimed in, and these are the following bits of information based on that feedback. So thanks to those people that did that. Michael Adams and Orlando Woolridge. I think you even might have suggested Orlando Woolridge in a follow-up comment, but Chris, a.k.a. at Wince84, he suggested Michael Adams was criminally overlooked in 1991. So we'll talk about him first with the Denver Nuggets. Michael Adams in 1991. I'm just padding until I get to the right screen. He had...
So you're talking about Michael Adams from Denver?
Yes, that Michael Adams from Denver. These are his 1991 numbers. 26.5 points a game, 10.5 assists per contest, 2.2 steals and 4 rebounds, if you don't mind. What an incredible line of numbers for that season. He was given the nod for the 92 All-Star game, probably based on the numbers from 1991. an incredible line from a team that really did struggle during that 1991 season.
And as you mentioned before, the former Chicago Bull great Orlando Woodridge had a great year with the Nuggets in 1990-91, after having some of his own personal issues off the court. He only played in 53 games that year, but averaged 25.1 points per game, 7 rebounds, which showed you, high potency scorer that he was right throughout his NBA career.
For him to average 25 a game and Michael Adams 26 point something, over 51 points combined between them, so that was part of the reason why Denver lit it up in terms of their scoring for the season, but unfortunately their defense was just dreadful and they were giving up 130 points a game. So you can see why they had flashes of brilliance in terms of offense, but couldn't put it together on the court and struggled quite mightily, to be honest.
When you start three guys like Orlando Woolridge, Michael Adams and Blair Rasmussen, three guys who aren't exactly defensive clampdown players, you can see how they inexplicably allowed 130 points per game that year.
You're right. Now, another thing that Chris via Twitter brought up was Orlando Magic. Speaking of Orlando, it's a very vague segue there, but the Orlando Magic were in the Western Conference in 1991 as part of the alignment of conferences and the divisions and things like that, and having the new expansion teams in the league. The Magic were actually based as a Western Conference team, even though they were clearly on the East Coast. So that was quite interesting in itself, just another bit of random information there. But thanks to Chris for digging into that and providing that information to me before we recorded today.
I'm pretty sure that, along with the Orlando Magic, that the Charlotte Hornets were at one point in the West as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of different rearrangement of conferences and divisions and things in the early three or four seasons that these expansion teams were in the league. They finally did get sorted and ended up, for the most part, being in the correct divisions and conferences going forward. Now, another Twitter mention, this time by a good mate of mine and of the show, Todd Spear, at ToddSpear35 on Twitter. He did mention the great Bernard King. He had a great season in 1991, coming off that incredibly tough comeback from almost career-ending knee surgery many years prior. Bernard King had a season for the ages. At the age of 34, he played 64 games with the Washington Bullets in 91, and he had two 50-point games, 9 40-plus point games on a team that he all but single-handedly dragged to a 30-52 record. So it must not go without saying that what a great player Bernard King was, albeit his career was tragically affected, I guess, by multiple injuries, but a fantastic effort at age 34.
An incredible comeback from Bernard, who was an awesome player in the 80s, definitely one of the marquee names in the early 80s in the NBA. And his season was punctuated by his third team All-NBA selection too, I think, which was really impressive.
Yep. Another Twitter follower, mate. This time, Travis Reed. So thanks, Travis, at Travis M. Reed. He has suggested you can't do a 1991 episode without referring to D. Brown's blind dunk. 1991 All-Star Weekend Slam Dunk Contest. We've purposely steered clear of discussing the All-Star Weekend festivities as far as three-point shootouts and dunk comps go. However, and I can see on camera now, which is fantastic, and it's distracted me mightily, but I love it, you've just pulled out a pair of Reebok pumps, which look absolutely brand new. Just talk about that for a second, mate. I'm quite stunned at this stage.
That's right, Adam. I'm holding a pair of the Reebok Omni Lights that D. Brown wore at that dunk comp and made a lot of money for Reebok that year by he had all the cameras on him, and in between dunks, he'd reach down and pump up his sneakers. And then after he did his dunk, he let the air out, which was just invaluable marketing for Reebok and the Reebok pump sneaker. That dunk comp was the top 10 all-time dunk comp with some of the participants in it, but in particular, D. Brown, 6'1", and what appeared to be about 45 kilos in weight, because he was really, really skinny. But his dunks in that dunk comp were awesome. And another great event at that All-Star weekend was the other three-point shootout that was won by Craig Hodges of the Bulls. One of the most amazing sporting events, not just All-Star Weekend events, but one of the most amazing sporting events that you'll ever see was Craig Hodges hitting 19 consecutive three-pointers in one of the rounds of the three-point shootout. So if you ever get a chance, hop on YouTube and look up Craig Hodges' 1991 three-point shootout. Absolutely awesome, Adam.
Without doubt, and I'll include a link to this sort of stuff in the show notes, which can be found at inallanis.com/26, being episode 26. Yeah, that was fantastic. That shooting display by Hodges was incredible, and it was the first 19 straight that he hit to begin the round. Unfortunately, missed out on the all-time record in a single round, but it was the most impressive display of shooting I've ever seen.
I think he missed 4 out of the last 6 balls, which was what made him come up short from the all-time record, but to hit 19 straight threes, yeah, even if you try that in an empty gym without a time restriction and all the cameras and 20,000 fans around you, to hit 19 straight threes, unless you're me, it's very hard to do. So it was very impressive.
Pumping up your own tyres, I like it.
Adam, at 35, the speed and quickness, which was actually never there, is it's definitely all gone now. So I've got to highlight my one and only half-decent skill that I have, shooting the long ball.
When I actually get to see you in person one day, we need to find the nearest court and have a three-point shootout, because I think, I don't want to go off, you know, half-cocked here, but I think I'm probably the greatest three-point shooter, in Australia at least. Without doubt, I reckon I could knock down more threes than anybody else in a given period of time. So let's do it.
In my Thursday evening men's competition game last week here in Knox in Melbourne, hit a game-winning three with about 4 seconds left in the game. So, yeah, Adam, if you want to bring your stuff down here, show it to me. I'll take you on, brother.
All right, I will take you up on that. I'm coming down to, I'll be in your neck of the woods in September, I believe, at this stage. Depending on when you're listening to this, it could be totally irrelevant. But for you, Aaron Steen, the gauntlet has been thrown down.
In that case, I'll be overseas in September.
Are you or not? No, you're not. No, I don't think so. Now, in the past, we have steered clear of the All-Star Weekend competitions, like the dunk contest and the three-point shootout, but it was brought up particularly by one of the followers on Twitter, so we did deviate that way, and thank you again to Travis Reed for bringing that one up. Now, this time on to another quick Twitter mention from Tom Reed, one of the hosts of Believe the Hype NBA podcast, Tom Reed. So thanks for your suggestion, Tom. He said we could not go past mentioning Magic Johnson and his 17 triple-doubles in the 1991 season. He had 13 triple-dubs in the regular season, and then he had 4 more in the playoffs, 2 of which were in the NBA finals, which we'll get to shortly. But that's one of the all-time single-season highs in triple-doubles. A great effort from the Magic Man.
And in any other season, to pick up 13 triple-doubles during the regular season would be enough to win you an MVP. It was just unfortunate for him that he had MJ to compete against, and he also probably got an MVP the other year before that he shouldn't have as well. So I think that MJ was most definitely the deserving winner of the MVP that year. But to get 17 triple-doubles during a season, yeah, is incredible.
I love how you've just turned it into a dig at Magic at the same time, which is awesome because it relates back to Jordan getting robbed, so I like it.
I'm all about the cheap shots.
No doubt. No doubt. Now, another person that we were going to touch on a bit later was Adrian Dantley. Now, this is a follow-up to another tweet from Steve Smith, FFX. He was talking about the sad end to Dantley's career, and unfortunately it did end pretty ordinarily in terms of he only played 10 games in his final season, this 1991 season, with the Milwaukee Bucks. From 1980 to 1986, Adrian Dantley averaged an incredible 29.6 points a game, 6.2 rebounds, 3.7 assists, and also 1.1 steals per game. He's a six-time All-Star, and he was the 1977 Rookie of the Year. So an amazing career from Adrian Dantley, but he did have a very sad end by playing those final few games in Milwaukee. Anything you wanted to add about Adrian Dantley there, mate? Are you happy to stare at your basketball cards or play with your mobile phone or whatever else you're doing?
I'm just on Twitter, actually, at the moment, looking at all of the other wonderful interaction that we had from some of our followers and hopefully people that will soon be followers.
Very true indeed. We did have some good discussion points raised today when we threw the question out there. So hopefully if you're listening to this and you haven't participated yet, please join us in the conversation as well. Now, mate, we get to a feature that I'd love to bring back by unpopular demand, nicknames that never were. Now, when I threw this out there on Twitter last night, and also I've followed up again today in the hope that somebody would take the bait and at least give one suggestion, unfortunately none came through. So what I had to do was put my mind to it, go through some of the players myself, and come up with fake nicknames that never were.
And listeners, as a man who desperately loves a pun, get ready for some podcast gold because these are going to be brilliant.
They're pretty ordinary, and you've talked them up now to the point where people will hear them and just go, yeah, okay. But I found 5 players who were on NBA rosters during the 1991 season in no particular order. Darryl Walker, also known as the pedestrian. let's see, who else do we have? Lance Blanks. I did have a nickname for him, but it's totally slipped my mind at the moment. Gerald Patio. His nickname was the Veranda. It didn't quite come off as well as I'd hoped. Danny Ferry. Jordan had a run-in with the great Danny Ferry in one of the, I think it was the 92 Eastern Conference Finals. Is that the Alan Parsons Project?
What are you stopping for? I'm giving you some background music.
Okay, keep going. Danny Ferry. He was also known as the Transportation Boat. Although that never really took off. And last but not least, Alan Ogg, who was also known as the Wizard of Ogg. Rest in peace, actually, Alan Ogg. I didn't actually know until I checked back on Basketball Reference today that Alan Ogg had passed away a few years ago. So, in all seriousness, rest in peace, Alan Ogg. Now, that's about all it deserved.
Why haven't we used these in the past?
That's right. Out there in podcast land, I think that's about the sound that people will be hearing. Oh, there goes a tumbleweed. Okay. That was some great nicknames that never were. All right. Let's move on, mate, to the NBA playoffs and NBA finals. We won't go into every series, of course, but we will focus on the two teams that made it to the finals, the LA Lakers and the Chicago Bulls. So in the first round of the Eastern Conference Finals, the Bulls disposed handily of the New York Knicks in a three-game sweep. Probably most famous in that series was Jordan's insane dunk over Patrick Ewing when he spun baseline, threw it down over Ewing and the foul. That's probably the best moment from that series. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think on many countdown lists, it's voted as MJ's best dunk ever. He dribbles towards the other sideline. He's got Oakley and Starks on him, and then he just does this lightning quick reverse dribble back baseline, and just the other poster on Patrick was wonderful.
Just destroyed him. The series was really never close. Game one was a blowout, like a 31-point loss to the Knicks. So they got broken in game one, really. The Bulls won by 10 in game two, and then they went to New York and dismounted them further, winning by another quite easy margin and closing out the series in three games. Now, the LA Lakers, meanwhile, they also had a three-game sweep over the Houston Rockets, but their series was a little bit closer than the scores perhaps suggested. It was only a two-point game in game one, and game two, the Lakers won by 11. Game three, they held on to win by 4 points and then advanced through to the second round. I didn't actually check out any of the highlights of the Lakers in the lead-up to the final series itself. So is there anything else you'd like to add about the Lakers in that first round of the playoffs?
No.
All right, that's good. So let's move on. We'll move on now to the second round. In the second round, the Bulls beat the Philadelphia 76ers, led by Charles Barkley. It was a five-game series, so the Bulls only dropped one game, which was game three, and they lost by just 2 points. You could see that the frustration from the 76ers was clearly evident. Barkley was only another one full season away from being on his way to the Phoenix Suns. He'd had a gutful. His time was coming to an end with the 76ers, and the Bulls would advance to the Eastern Conference Finals to take on the Detroit Pistons, which we'll get to in just a moment. Did you want to add anything about that Philadelphia series?
No, nothing in particular about that series. I did want to make mention of another very cool Eastern Conference series that happened in the first round, the Boston Celtics and the Indiana Pacers. An amazing series, if only for the shootout in between Chuck Person and Larry Bird. They both had amazing games, in particular Chuck Person early in the series. Some of his shooting was just incredible. And then you had in game five when Larry Bird fell over and smashed his head on the parquet floor at Boston Garden and had to go off for a certain amount of time and then came back and was hitting fadeaways and taking the ball to the hoop. It was a very cool series.
That was a fantastic series. And Person, when he gets on fire, some of his reactions are just absolutely amazing. And he was giving us the full gamut of his emotions. It went to a fifth and deciding game, and the Celtics hang on to win that one by 3 points. It was 124 to 121 at Boston, and that was that fantastic game, as you mentioned, where Bird went off the court injured, came back, fans went berserk, and the Celtics hung on to get through to the second round. Now, the Lakers, their semi-final opponent was the Golden State Warriors, and that was a pretty entertaining series. It was a five-game series. The Lakers would advance 4-1, but a lot of high-scoring games, particularly given they were playoff games. So a lot of run and gun, and this was the era of run TMC, Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Chris Mullin. An up-and-down fun series that the Lakers ended up winning in 5 games, mate.
Well, that's something to add when you start talking about the Bulls Pistons.
Okay, let's get to the conference finals, mate. Now, as I alluded to near the start of the episode, the Bulls have struggled mightily against the Pistons on their way up to the hill of ascendancy in terms of the NBA. In the second round of the 88 playoffs, the Pistons eliminated the Bulls. In the 89 and 90 Eastern Conference finals, they went to 6 games in 89, 7 games in 1990, but they still couldn't quite get over the hump. And 1991 was a whole different story, a whole new ethos for the Bulls. 25th season in the league, they had a point to prove. They were playing more as a team. Jordan wasn't just a one-man wrecking crew. And it led and culminated in the 91 Eastern Conference finals, mate.
Two of the Eastern Conference final series that the Bulls played in their 6 NBA titles were against the Orlando Magic in 96, when they had the up-and-coming Orlando Magic, who were expected to really push the Bulls in that series, and the Bulls just came out to prove a point and went whack and swept them. And they did the same thing in 1991, had their hands full the previous 3 years in the playoffs with the Pistons, and they had obviously grown as a team and improved to a point where, again, they were able to come out and just say, nah, you guys are finished, this is our turn, and swept them and embarrassed them, really.
That led to, in Game 4, the now infamous walk-off. The clock hadn't even expired, and the Pistons, all heads hung in shame, walked past the Bulls bench, didn't even offer as much as a well done on the way out. There's no other way you can really look at it other than saying it was a very classless act on their home court, no less, to end their reign as back-to-back NBA champions. A very bad way for them to finish their 1991 campaign.
And also first signs of the Pistons on the way down, on the decline as a franchise too, because they had a few lean years after that.
Yeah, they did for sure. And the Bulls won quite comprehensively. Game 3 was the closest game of the series. It was a 6-point win to the Bulls in Detroit. And then Game 4, they just blew them off the court, won by 21 points. And this is where Pippen in particular had his revenge, didn't get rattled at all by any of the defenders on Detroit. So no matter what they did, he pretty much just laughed it off or ignored it, used it to channel his aggression and just put them to the sword pretty much, and effectively ended any hoodoo that could be associated with him and the Detroit Pistons, given that he was perhaps questioned mentally in the 89 and 90 playoff campaigns.
He definitely got some very similar treatment from the Pistons in this series too, to what he got in the previous years. He got thrown into the front row behind one of the baskets in Detroit by Dennis Rodman in one of the games. So he definitely got the same kind of treatment, but had grown past it.
The Bulls completely dismantled the Pistons on their way to their first NBA Finals. Meanwhile, in the Western Conference, the Lakers were extended to 6 games over the Portland Trailblazers. They ended up hanging on to win in Game 6 at LA. It was a great finish to Game 6. The Lakers hung on to win by 1 point. Probably the most famous thing I can recall from that game is the closing seconds where Magic grabbed the ball and threw it down the other end of the court, and time had almost expired. Some of the fans began celebrating like the game was over, but there was a few fractions of a second left. They had to put some time back on the clock, but Magic, quite a clever move, just threw the ball down the other end of the court, and that's effectively end of the game and the series, giving them the berth in the NBA Finals.
It was quite the upset too, the Lakers beating the Trailblazers in that series after the regular season that the Blazers had winning 63 games. So I think that everyone actually expected a Portland-Chicago final series, so the LA Lakers upset that.
They did indeed, and that would become a reality in 1992, which we'll get to, I'm sure, in another episode of the show. The Lakers went 58-24, so they had the third best record in the West. Because the Bulls had a better record overall, the Bulls had home court advantage throughout the NBA Finals. The Bulls beat the Lakers in 5 games. It was 4-1. After Chicago dropped that first game in Chicago in one of the most memorable NBA Finals games that I can recall, the Lakers won 93-91. Scottie Pippen threw up a half-court heave at the buzzer, which hit the back rim and backboard, almost dropped in, and could have actually won the game in one of the most memorable endings ever, but obviously it didn't happen.
All that a lot of people recall from that game, the other 2 shots from long arm Sam Perkins and from MJ, the other one that he missed at the other end after Sam Perkins put him up with the 3. But yeah, I do quite vividly remember that shot by Pippen as I watched that game last week.
There you go. You would remember it very vividly then. Jordan's last shot in that final 10 seconds there, it was eerily similar to his game-winning play in 1997 NBA Finals Game 1. He went right, did a crossover left, threw his defender completely off, had a wide-open shot, a great-looking shot, rimmed out, and that led to a foul, which then led to free throws and then Pippen missing at the very end at the buzzer. But he couldn't have been more wide-open if he tried. It was a great look, just didn't drop in. people were thinking, oh no, they're already down one zip. Are they going to be able to come back and win one to even it up? Little did we know, they'd sweep the next four games. Now, game two, Bulls had a win in a big blowout, 107-86, but there was many great things that happened in this game, including, of course, Jordan's miraculous layup that started off as a flying one-hander, which almost was a dunk, change in midair, switched hands, left-hand lay-in, thanks for coming. That's obviously one of his biggest highlight moves ever in the NBA Finals, no less. And he also hit 13 consecutive field goals. John Paxson was on fire. I mean, everything was happening. The Bulls blew out the Lakers and tied the series up, heading back to La La Land.
It was one of those games like the other San Antonio Spurs had in the NBA Finals in 2013. I can't remember which game it was. They shot over 60% from the floor. It was one of those games where it's just an extraordinary shooting display that you hardly ever see, especially in the NBA Finals. But the Bulls did something like that in Game 2. They were just on fire, especially in the other third quarter, which is when they blew the game out.
Yeah. Now, Jordan had a great game in Game 2. His Game 1 was fantastic as well, it must be said. And in Game 2, he had 33 points, 13 assists, 7 rebounds. But also, he had plenty of assistants in the scoring column. Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, both had 20-point games. Johnny Pax, 16 points on 8 of 8 from the field, if you don't mind, as well. So, great effort by the supporting cast that really helped even the series back up and gave them plenty of momentum heading back to LA for the next three games.
It was quite amazing that a younger team like the Bulls in their first NBA Finals series could drop Game 1 at home to, you know, the more experienced LA Lakers, who had been there to the finals so many times during the 1980s, and reel off the four consecutive wins, especially the other three straight in LA. Quite remarkable.
Game 3 headed back to Los Angeles, and the Bulls hung on to winning an overtime classic, 104-96. Now, Jordan hit a really clutch bucket with about 4 seconds left in regulation over the outstretched arms of Luddy Dievertz, sent it into overtime. So the Bulls outscored the Lakers 26-20 in that fourth quarter, and then they'd hang on to win in OT, taking a 2-1 advantage. Now, Jordan had another fantastic game, just missed out on a triple-double. He had 29 points, 9 assists, 9 rebounds. But also, Horace Grant had another fantastic game. He had 22 points and 11 rebounds, along with 3 assists as well. So plenty of help there for MJ as the Bulls took that 2-1 advantage and really started to get a stranglehold over the LA Lakers.
One thing MJ definitely got during that series was great help from his supporting cast. Like, Scotty had some amazing games all throughout the series, in particular in clincher, where I think he had 33 points. But he got great support from guys like John Paxson, Horace Grant, Cliff Levingston. He was really good off the Bulls bench. So he got some great support, which I think undoubtedly he needed to win that first title.
Yep. Now, John Paxson was fantastic supporting Jordan and the Bulls in general during the whole series. He was just incredible from the field and hit some major clutch shots. But also, it must be said that good news, Cliff Levingston was a really key player on the playoffs run in general, but also had some great games and some really telling moments during those final series where he came in, provided heaps of energy and excitement like he does. And yeah, he was a very crucial cog on that team. Another thing that should be noted in this series, Phil Jackson and the Bulls coaches decided to switch things up and put Scottie Pippen on Magic Johnson. It made things a lot tougher for the Magic man, with someone stronger and quicker than himself, comparable height, playing some really tight D on him. So Magic was thrown for the most part. It was a really telling move in terms of the series itself, and it helped the Bulls definitely get that advantage they needed to secure those final wins back in LA, mate.
Yeah, definitely one of the key moves of that series. The Lakers made a couple of adjustments and started going through guys like Divac a bit to try and counter that move. But that series was undoubtedly Scottie Pippen's coming out party. From that point on, yeah, he became one of the top 5 or 10 players in the NBA.
Now, let's go ahead to Game 4. The Bulls had a 2-1 lead. They ended up winning by 15 points and taking a stranglehold 3-1. Jordan led the Bulls again in scoring. He had 28 points, but importantly had 13 assists. So he was a definite playmaker as well. 4 other Bulls scored in double figures, which is fantastic. Now for the Lakers in Game 4, Luddy Dievertz had a fantastic game. He had 27 points and 11 rebounds himself. Magic Johnson had 22 points and 11 assists. So they did what they could, but they were really hamstrung, dare I say it, by injuries to some key players. And that ultimately led to Game 5 with Byron Scott and James Worthy actually being on the bench. They were just watching in street clothes, unfortunately, when it came to Game 5. So that was disappointing for the Lakers. Take nothing away from the Bulls, as they pretty much secured the series and only had to win one of their next three games.
The Bulls were helped a little bit by the injuries to Scott and Worthy, but I think that the way the Bulls were playing, they weren't going to be denied. They were going to win that series regardless.
Yeah, you're right. Now let's get on to game five. This is where the Bulls wrapped up the entire championship. It was a 108-101 victory. The LA fans, for the most part, were pretty much stunned, aside from Jack Nicholson storming the court and congratulating Phil Jackson just after the buzzer went. Pippen, as you said, had a monster game. He actually had 32 points on 10 of 22 shooting, 7 assists, 13 rebounds, thank you very much, and Jordan had 30 points and 10 assists, and then Johnny Paxson again came up huge, hit some massive shots, and he was 9 of 12 from the field, which in itself is fantastic. So he had 20 points, 4 assists, and even 3 rebounds as well. So he does get credit for that incredible run he had during the 91 finals. But boy, he was a mainstay. And without his assistance, along with Pippen and Jordan and Horace Grant, of course, really could have caused some trouble for the Bulls. But he came through and was very much a great supporting character.
I think at that time that Johnny Paxson was actually a free agent after that season. And I guess it would have been some conjecture as to whether or not the Bulls were going to re-sign him, but I remember reading in Sam Smith's great book, The Other Jordan Rules, about the plane ride home from LA to Chicago after they won the title, about Stacey King telling him each one of those jump shots was like the cash register ringing up extra $100,000 on his contract at the end of that season. So, yeah, if there was some umming and ahhing about him being re-signed, the performance in the finals was the full stop for him.
Well said, mate. And there was only 7 players who played in Game 5 for the LA Lakers, which is quite amazing. Usually you'd have, you know, 8 or 9 players who would see action, but only Sam Perkins, Alden Campbell, Magic Johnson, AC Green, Tony Smith, Terry Teagle, and Vlade Divac got court time. No one else. They were either DNPs or they were actually injured. Quite amazing that only 7 players would actually lace it up. In that final game, Sam Perkins had 22 points, Magic Johnson had 16, and Alden Campbell actually stepped up nicely and got 21 points himself. But yeah, the Lakers just couldn't get it together. They had a few injuries, and the Bulls just completely outplayed them and secured their first ever NBA Finals victory. Amazing scenes post-match, which you alluded to earlier. Some fantastic scenes there, mate, as they headed back into the bowels of the Forum, the Great Western Forum, to celebrate that first ever NBA title.
The shorthandedness of the Lakers was definitely shown by the amount of minutes that rookies Alden Campbell and Tony Smith played in that game. The celebrations after the game were fantastic for the Bulls with their first title in franchise history, and it's something that I'll never forget.
Some very fond memories for me as well, even over here in Australia, having to see it on tape delay and whatever else for us here. Now, just a couple of quick stats overall. The composite box score from the series: Jordan averaged 31.2 points, 6.6 boards, 11.4 assists, 2.8 steals, and 1.4 blocks. So he just did it all for the whole series. Pippen wasn't far behind in terms of getting close to triple-double average. He averaged about 21 points, just under 10 boards, and 7 assists thereabouts. Horace Grant fitted in nicely. I mean, Magic Johnson did it all for the Lakers. He did what he could, averaged just under 19 points, had 8 rebounds and 12.5 assists a contest. So the Lakers were just outmatched. The talent of the Bulls just came to the fore, and there was nothing they could really do in that 5-game loss to the Bulls. The Finals MVP went to Jordan. The Bulls were the first-time champions. That wraps up the 91 NBA season, mate. Anything you'd like to add?
No, just that I can be contacted via Twitter, at Steeny, spelled S-T-E-H-N-Y. My good friend Adam Howes and I also are co-administrators of the official Johnny Red Kerr page on Facebook. I look forward to talking NBA and Bulls in particular.
No problems at all, mate. And I'll include links to all those things that we've mentioned throughout the episode and how to contact us on the website. Just head to inallairness.com/26. So, Steeny, thanks again for joining me, mate. Been a great trip down memory lane as usual, and I look forward to future chats that we have.
Giddy up.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show, and share my web address with your friends and colleagues, inallairness.com. Check out the podcast archive for plenty more episodes with high-profile guests. Follow me on Twitter at inallairness. Please visit the show's social hub, facebook.com/inallairness. Join me next time for another edition of the show.